This is an ABC podcast.
I take full responsibility for my part in what happened, and I am deeply sorry for the consequences of what I was involved in. I failed in my responsibilities as vice-captain of the Australian cricket team.
That is David Warner apologising in the wake of Sandpapergate way back in 2018. He copped a lifetime leadership ban in Aussie cricket as part of his punishment. Doesn't that feel like a long time ago? And it feels to me that while some are still angry, many Aussie cricket fans have forgiven the opening batsman. When Cricket Australia announced they would change their code of conduct to potentially pave the way to absolution from the ban, it seemed official forgiveness was imminent too. But a convoluted appeal process meant Warner felt he would be subjected to what he called a humiliating media circus. He's posted a furious online statement declaring he's done with the appeal. The leadership ban will stand. There are huge implications for his involvement in Australian cricket. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily. Corbin Middlemass is the host of the Grandstand Cricket Podcast. Corby, we are all across Sandpapergate and Warner's subsequent leadership ban. Leading into this summer, the story around Warner was this. He's going to be lost to the Big Bash League because he wants the captain and he can't. So he's probably going to go and play overseas for a lot more money. So Cricket Australia understandably went to alleviate that situation. What action did they take?
Well, in the bylaws of the code of conduct at Cricket Australia, the way that it stood was that if you had accepted a ban in the past, such as the leadership ban that was handed down to David Warner and obviously suspended from playing for a period of time, you actually had no right to even appeal that. So whether it was 6 months down the track, 2 years down the track, or whatever it may be, there was no option there for the banned player to even have that case reopened, heard again, or the penalty overturned. So Cricket Australia essentially made moves to allow Warner to do that. So they changed the bylaw, and what it essentially did was that it gave Warner the opportunity, should he decide to go down that path, to appeal the sanction to an independent board at some point or some stage of his choosing.
And so Warner did seek to take that course of action. He applied to have his case heard, but instead of simply making a finding, Cricket Australia took a different course. What was that course and how did it impact this scenario?
Well, they effectively outsourced the entire process to an independent panel. And obviously their independent panels are very different from, say, the AFL's independent panel. So when the AFL like to do an independent panel, Stacky, sure, it's independent, but they don't just hand over all control of whatever happens. It's still essentially overseen by the governing body, and that they essentially set the terms of reference or at least the guidelines around how this independent process is going to unfold. We want you guys to make a recommendation, come back to us and tell us what that finding is. Essentially, what Cricket Australia seemingly have done here, reading between the lines of what Warner has said, is they've just outsourced the entire process. Judging by David Warner's response, and he put a statement out on his social media channels last night, that they were calling for this to be played out incredibly publicly.
In effect, counsel assisting, and it appears to some extent the review panel, want to conduct a public trial of me and what occurred during the third test at Newlands. They want to conduct a public spectacle to, in the panel's words, have a cleansing. I'm not prepared for my family to be the washing machine for cricket's dirty laundry.
He believes it would have unfolded to be somewhat of a lynch mob, and I agree with him that if that was to be reopened in a public forum, that's exactly what it would turn into. When Cricket Australia initially decided to change the code of conduct, it felt like the wording around it was more about things like, is he remorseful? Has there been reform on behalf of the individual since the incident occurred?
In the back of my mind, I suppose there is a tiny ray of hope that I may one day be given the privilege of playing for my country again.
Whereas this, what Warner's describing, sounds very much like we're going to rehear the entire thing all over again.
So it's fair to say that David Warner has reacted with a fair bit of anger. And what sort of course of action has he taken?
Well, it feels like he's had a certain amount of rage towards Cricket Australia for a long period of time. If you go back even before the first test.
At the end of the day, I'm not a criminal.
And I remember saying that around the time of the third ODI between Australia and England, maybe if he was a criminal, he would have had a chance to appeal before then. Obviously, in the court of law, you've actually got the option to do that. Whereas as an Australian cricketer who's serving a leadership ban, previously you didn't even have the option to undergo some kind of appeal. So I think he feels very much burnt by what went on.
You should get a right of an appeal at some stage. You know, I understand that they put a ban in place, but banning someone for life, I think, is a bit harsh.
There's still a whole lot of intrigue and mystery that surrounds exactly what took place in Cape Town, and feels like if you sort of, you know, look behind a few of the corners in Australian cricket, that someone will come up with a different version of events. And it feels like Warner's been sort of placed as the centerpiece of that, what happens at some stage if Warner speaks and tell his version of events for what went on here. And we're in this sort of bizarro world where you've got an independent panel that actually want Warner to tell his side of the story publicly, revisit the case, and yet it's Warner himself saying, hang on, I don't want to do that. I just want to show that I'm a changed man, and I just want to captain a team at domestic level or whatever it may be, and be involved in a leadership position under Cricket Australia's umbrella again. I'm not sure the governing body, if it's in their best interest, that is heard again. And yet, for whatever reason, we've got this independent panel that's trying to perform a public cleansing. So it's a complete mess.
Why is it, do you think, that Cricket Australia didn't sort of just take control and make a ruling and instead outsourced this to this independent panel?
That's a great question. Without trying to sort of draw too long a bow here, I think you can almost sort of look at other times where you'd think, come on, it's time for the governing body to step in and make a hard call. And yet when the Tim Payne scenario unfolded, for example, that, you know, the way how messy that was dealt with when all of it came to light, despite the fact it was, you know, previously discussed behind closed doors in the past, and, you know, Payne himself felt like there was already a resolution.
That investigation and a Cricket Tasmania HR investigation at the same time found that there had been no breach of the Cricket Australia Code of Conduct. Although exonerated, I deeply regretted this incident at the time and still do today.
Instead, the case was reopened, and it was this sort of clumsy exit of the Australian captain from the team at that time. That they really struggled to sack Justin Langer, even as recently as a couple of weeks ago. I had Nick Hockley on radio.
I mean, I think this, you know, I think this notion that in any way kind of Justin was sacked is not right. We had some really great dialogue between all of the leadership group. We put in place a great plan, executed brilliantly. As we said at the time, after running a proper process, we were thinking about whether that's a long-term solution, and we decided we'd had a really strong formula to work through to defend the T20 World Cup, and then it was time to move in a different direction.
Essentially, they decided that they didn't want Justin Langer to be the coach of the Australian team anymore, and they struggled to do that. And then again here, where it's on the governing body to make a decision here, that they were the ones that stepped in with, you know, really 4 days notice last time to hand down those, you know, heavy penalties.
It's tad disappointing that when you make a decision in 2018, it's in 4 days and then this takes 9 months. So that's the hardest thing. It actually makes me look like I'm campaigning, which I'm totally not.
It's on them now to actually come forward and decide one way or the other, whatever their decision turns out to be. If they decide that they believe, you know, Warner is a changed man, we want him to captain a team again at some level, or if they just want to uphold their original decision, I think it's absolutely on Cricket Australia rather than trying to outsource that part of it.
So Warner's essentially given up on clearing his name in an official capacity and it's showing that he's, you know, reformed his behaviour. So what does this mean for him?
Well, I think it means that there's some level of detachment that's always going to be there between him and the governing body. That, yeah, even the way that Steve Smith is perceived and the guys that were involved in that episode, as much as they try to outrun it, it feels like as long as David Warner's time is left in Australian cricket as a player, he's not going to be able to be given a second chance on the leadership front. So I can understand that he would feel particularly bruised by that, and that's such a heavy penalty compared to what happened with the other two that were central to what went on. It's a bit of a sad end for a guy that's a generational player.
Here's Roach, he's running into bowl. Yeah. And it's driven handsomely and it's racing away to the deep cover boundary, and it will get there in front of Chanderpaul for four. Superb shot.
That he's not going to get the chance to at least sort of overturn that part of it and prove sort of how far he's come as a cricketer and a person from those events.
Does it raise a threat to his involvement with Australian cricket in terms of his participation in the BBL and indeed, to a lesser extent, but potentially internationally even?
No doubt. It's a huge risk for Australian cricket that he'll be lost to our domestic competition here. He's decided to come and play after, you know, initially exploring an option overseas. So he's going to participate in the Big Bash this year with the Sydney Thunder. But given the disconnect between him and Australian cricket at the moment, he's already flagged his intentions to retire from the national team, certainly in the longest format of the game in the next 12 to 18 months, and who knows, in the white ball arena sometime after that. And he was looking at potentially the 2024 T20 World Cup in the USA. But from that point onwards, he's essentially going to be an independent contractor, a chance to go and shop his wares around the world. And with the way that things are with Cricket Australia at the moment, this certainly isn't something that's drawing him towards the governing body and the ailing Big Bash here. And if there's going to be big bucks on offer to go and play overseas, that this isn't an episode which is certainly going to make him look favourably on Australian cricket.
We know in recent years Cricket Australia and the players have had a strained relationship. What do you think this episode will do for trust between the two parties?
Yeah, I think it just continues to show the divide that exists between the players and Cricket Australia. I certainly don't think it helps to mend that relationship. It feels like they operate very much in a silo, and Justin Langer, love to sort of create that environment as well, that, you know, where the players, where the group, and what happens at head office is separate to us. And it feels very much like it's still that way at the moment. And there's a clear disconnect between those running the game and a relatively young executive team or inexperienced executive team and the playing group themselves.
Corbin Middlemass, thanks so much for your time.
Anytime.
Headlines. Ronaldo has addressed his benching the only way he would do so, with an interview with Piers Morgan. Kidding. He did it on his Instagram account, commending his teammates' performance and rallying the Portuguese cause at the FIFA World Cup. If you're wondering why everyone's talking about him right now, listen to our episode with SBS football host Richard Bayliss. He does a very good job of breaking down the entire complex Wild story. Baseballer Aaron Judge has signed one of the most lucrative deals in the sport. It's a reported 9-year, $535 million deal to play with the New York Yankees. Judge hit 62 home runs last season. That's an American League record. Interestingly, the team offered him a $317 million deal at the start of that season, and he knocked them back. That is a big bet to win. Nike has officially cut ties with NBA star Kyrie Irving after he promoted an anti-Semitic film via Twitter. I noticed not too many Aussie publications now mentioning that he was born in Melbourne. It was a different story to the salad days when he was in Cleveland winning championships. If you want to understand that story better, check out the link in our show notes. And in case you have not heard the news, the Hopman Cup is back. Not in Perth, not even in Australia, but in the French town of Nice. Look, I said it was back. I didn't say where it was back. That tournament will be played July 19 to 23 next year. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Poppy Penny. For more excellent cricket analysis from Corbin, as well as the views of ex-Test opener Ed Cowan, keep an eye out for the Grandstand Cricket Podcast. It's on the Listen app and anywhere you get your podcasts.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.